everybody doing today? Great to have you here on 4th of July weekend with all of your fingers still attached, which after fireworks, I always consider that a win. Hello to those watching at our Issaquah campus, our Duval campus, and online as well. Like Nick said, my name is Shane. I'm one of the pastors here at Timberlake. I oversee our Issaquah campus, and it's great to be here with you today. I think we have a picture of my family to throw up. That is my wife, Haley. We have been married for 6 years next week. And then the good-looking one in the picture is my son, Henley, who is 1 year old. You may be wondering, I'm not wearing a wedding ring today. It's because my wife and I got in a big fight this morning. No. I was actually rolling the inflatables, and it popped off, and I couldn't find it. And so same inflatables that are up there today. And so if one of your kids playing on the inflatables happens to find a ring, I would much appreciate that. If you want to take the note sheet out of your program, we are going to continue our Underdogs series. As we get started today, I want you to do me a favor. Turn to somebody near you. You can either choose the person to your right or the person to your left. I'll let you go ahead and choose whichever one you personally find more attractive. Husbands, if one of the options is your wife, you may consider choosing her. I'm just trying to help you out. Once you've locked in your selection, go ahead and let them know when something unexpected happens. Do you freak out or do you live in the moment? When something unexpected happens, do you freak out or do you live in the moment? Choose one of those two. Ready, go. The unexpected, really, that is what Underdogs is all about. The power of the unexpected. In 1964, a freighter named the All Kuwait capsized and sunk to the bottom of the Kuwait harbor. Now, the government would have left the ship where it was, except for its cargo. You see, on board this vessel was 6,000 sheep, which the government was afraid, as they decomposed, would contaminate the harbor. So the shipping company was tasked with the job of cleaning up the mess. The only problem was no one knew how to do it. Enter a Danish inventor named Carl Currier. Currier had several small inventions to his name already, a few household appliances, and he was a very creative guy. And so the owners of the All Kuwait asked Currier if he could help. Carl Currier concluded that there was no way to do the cleanup while the ship was underwater. It would have to be brought to the surface. The problem was all conventional ship-raising methods had already failed. So Currier said, "Let me give it some thought." Well, he thought about it, and here's what he came up with. He dispatched a vessel to the Kuwait harbor armed with a long injector hose and 27 million pea-sized polystyrene pellets. Currier believed that these small, hollow, ultra-buoyant plastic balls, if injected into the hull of the ship, would surface it. So divers carried out his plan, and it worked. Currier was paid $186,000 for his idea. Well, he went on to raise ships in Greenland and Scotland, and eventually he joined forces with the leading ship-raising company in Holland. And the bottom line is this: today, polystyrene pellets have been used routinely to raise ships. Now, here's the part of the story that I love. Currier got this idea while reading a 1949 comic book about Donald Duck, who used ping pong balls to raise a ship. So what is today common practice was at that point just this random, crazy idea from a very unexpected and unlikely source, a comic book. I tell you that story to say this. Sometimes it's the unexpected that make the biggest difference. 1 Corinthians 1:27 says it like this: "But God chose the foolish things of this world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of this world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him." Go ahead and underline any of the words in that passage that describe your spouse. No, don't do that. Don't do that. But what's Paul trying to say? Paul's saying God likes underdogs. God likes underdogs. The first fill-in on your note sheet is this: God uses unlikely people in unexpected ways. God uses unlikely people in unexpected ways. Maybe you're here today and you feel like an unlikely person. You'd say, you know what, because of my past, because of my personality, I am not typically a church person. I'm not typically who you would consider to be included on God's team. But what we've been talking about for the last few weeks is how you are exactly the type of person that God likes to use. Maybe you're here today, and it's more of an unexpected way that God has been working or wanting to work in your life. It's a season or a situation or a struggle that you're facing, and God is using it to accomplish something in your life or through your life. Sometimes it's a conversation, an unexpected conversation, not something we planned on having, not something we prepared for, but all of a sudden it comes up. And God would use us to be a voice of hope and of truth to someone else. God uses unlikely people in unexpected ways to accomplish great things. The underdog that I want to look at today is a man named Joseph. Joseph's account can be found in the book of Genesis, the first book in the Bible. And what I want to do today is I want to walk through Joseph's story. And I want to look at some unexpected things that Joseph did that put him in a position to be used by God. Genesis 37, starting in verse 2. "This is the account of Jacob's family line. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And he brought their father a bad report about them." So he's 17 years old and he's a tattletale. "When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers, they hated him all the more." Joseph is the favorite son, and all of his siblings know it. Now, I'm sure there's a parenting lesson in there somewhere. But to make matters worse, Joseph's dad gets him this colorful, ornate coat, Joseph's coat of many colors. And when his brothers see it, they hate him even more. And then to seal the deal, Joseph has these two dreams that he shares with his family. He says, "Guys, listen, I had this dream last night, and we were all out in the field gathering grain, and my sheaf of grain stood upright. And all of your sheaves of grain gathered around mine and bowed down to it." What do you think about that? And he says, "I had another dream. And in this one, the sun and the moon and 11 stars all bowed down to me." Huh. Now, you and I, we have weird dreams all the time, and we don't think anything of it other than, what did I eat for dinner last night? But in this culture, dreams were significant. Dreams were important. God would often speak to people through dreams. And so Joseph is this annoying younger brother with a dream that he has interpreted as meaning his whole family is going to bow down and worship him, which I'm sure you can imagine how the rest of his family feels about this. And so one day, Joseph's father sends Joseph out to go and check on his brothers. And they see him coming from a long way off, and they say, "Let's just kill him." One of the brothers, the financially smart brother, says, no, let's not kill him. Let's just sell him on eBay. We'll make a lot of money off of it. And so Joseph arrives. They beat him up. They throw him in a pit. And then a band of Ishmaelite travelers are coming by, and they sell Joseph as a slave. Joseph is taken to Egypt and eventually is sold to a man named Potiphar, who is the captain of Pharaoh's guard in Egypt. And instead of getting angry or giving up, the first lesson that we learn from Joseph is this. Joseph saw the opportunity in the interruption. Joseph saw the opportunity in the interruption. Genesis 39, verse 2 says this. We'll pick back up the story. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his whole household and entrusted to his care everything he owned. Now, Joseph didn't plan on any of these things to happen. Joseph had his whole life planned out, and everything was lining up. He had dreams of great things. He was the favorite son. He had this sweet, colorful jacket that the ladies loved. And then he gets betrayed by his brothers and sold as a slave. His life gets interrupted. Now, I've never been betrayed by my family and sold as a slave, probably because they were never given a large enough offer. But I know for me, if I was in that situation, I don't know about you, but for me, it would have been difficult for me to be a model employee for Potiphar. If the story was about me, it could have easily read that Joseph was angry and he looked for a way to escape, and anytime Potiphar wasn't looking, he spit in his coffee. But Joseph, instead of giving up and getting down or blaming God, Joseph decided to make the most of the situation that he found himself in. Joseph worked hard, and he gained favor with his boss. He worked his way up to eventually be managing the entire household. Joseph said, if I have to be a servant, I'm going to be the best servant that I can be. Joseph decided to see the opportunity in the interruption. The reality is that we spend our lives managing interruptions, don't we? I read a study the other day that said the average four-year-old asks 437 questions a day. I know what some of you moms are thinking. You haven't met my kid. It's more like 437 questions an hour, right? What's the most common question a four-year-old's going to ask? Why? You're watching sports, and your kids come and they want to play. You're walking to the mailbox, and you're in a hurry, and a neighbor comes out, and they want to talk. You're at work, and it's lunchtime, and a coworker is having a crisis, and they want to chat about her boyfriend and how he won't propose to her, and what can she do. And you're just trying to eat your PB&J and check your Facebook. Some interruptions are good things, and some can be bad things. Your career path or your education plan gets interrupted. You just got married, and you find out you're pregnant. And you were hoping to wait a while before having kids. And now all of a sudden, your life is interrupted. And the way you respond will determine what you experience. And sometimes, if we let him, God can do something incredible. God can use an interruption to accomplish something great. If you read through the New Testament, the second half of the Bible, you'll find that Jesus was interrupted a lot. In fact, almost every one of Jesus' miracles was the result of an interruption. It wasn't on his to-do list for the day. Jesus would be traveling from one town to the next, and a crowd would gather and block his way. Jesus would be in a conversation with someone, and someone else would butt in. Even while Jesus is dying on the cross, he gets interrupted. The thief on the cross next to him wants to chat. It's like, I'm dying for the sins of the whole world right now. I'm a little bit busy. If you read through the New Testament, you'll see that 39 times Jesus was interrupted, and every single interruption led to meaningful conversation, significant ministry, authentic relationships, teaching moments, and countless miracles that would have been missed if Jesus had seen the interruption as an obstacle, as something to get through or to get by or to get around. What would happen if the next time you got interrupted, you decided to make the most of the moment? The next time your child interrupts you, the next time your spouse interrupts you, the next time a neighbor or a coworker interrupts you, the next time a stranger interrupts your day, what would it be like if instead of looking at it as an inconvenience, you saw it as an opportunity? Now, it's not about hoping to be interrupted or trying to be unproductive with our days, but there's something powerful that happens when we choose to go throughout our day expecting a moment to arise where we can live out our faith, where we're looking for a chance to leave people in a better condition than we find them. Well, it leads us to our next point. Number two, Joseph decided to apply his faith. Joseph decided to apply his faith. Joseph is working for Potiphar, and he works with integrity, and he works hard, and things are going well, until he has an altercation with Potiphar's wife. Potiphar's wife is attracted to Joseph, and she tries to seduce him. And Joseph says, no, I can't do this to God. I can't do this to my boss, and he turns her down. She grabs a hold of his robe. Joseph takes off running and leaves his robe behind. And then when her husband gets home that night, she lies and tells him that Joseph had attacked her. And so Joseph is wrongly accused and sent to prison. Joseph finds himself in jail. And once again, Joseph works hard and he finds favor with the prison warden. Joseph says, if I've got to be a prisoner, I'm going to be the best prisoner that there ever has been. And then after some time, the Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker end up in prison alongside Joseph. And one day, Joseph notices that they both look sad. They've got this dejected look on their face. And he says, what's wrong? And this is what they say in Genesis 40, verse 8. We both had dreams, they answered, but there is no one to interpret them. Then Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams. They both tell Joseph their dreams, and Joseph interprets them. He says to the cupbearer, says, your dream means that in 3 days, Pharaoh is going to take you out of prison and give you your job back. He says to the baker, he says, unfortunately, your dream's a little different. Your dream means that in 3 days, the Pharaoh is going to have you beheaded. Sorry about that. Now let's rewind. Joseph is having a good life. He's the favorite son on the fast track to an easy life. Everything is working out for him. And finally, his family betrays him. He's sold as a slave. But he continues to keep his head up. He works hard. And finally, when it seems like things are working out for him, he's wrongly accused and sent to prison. And then this cupbearer and this baker show up, and they're having a bad day. And they say, we've got a problem. And Joseph, instead of saying, you've got a problem, let me tell you about problems. No, Joseph decides to do something unexpected. Joseph says, you have a problem? I know a God who can help. I know a God who can help. Joseph, in every situation that he finds himself in, he decides to apply his faith. James 1:22 says it like this. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror. And after looking at himself, he goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. Underline those four words. Do what it says. Spiritual maturity is not about as much about how much you know as it is about how much you apply. Jesus said in Matthew 4:18, it's not in your notes. Jesus says to a group of men, he says, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. Follow me. Come spend time with me. Come see how I live. Come see how I talk. And your life will be different because of our relationship. The question for those of us that have chosen to follow Jesus is always this. Is the way that Jesus lived affecting the way that I live? If you want God to do a work in your heart and in your life, a great place to start is to read the Bible and say this. How can I live differently in light of the truth that I've just read? How can I speak differently in light of the truth that I've just read? How can I think differently in light of the truth that I've just read? Every week on the back of your connection card, there's a spot that says next steps as an opportunity for you to apply your faith and take a faith step. Joseph let his faith affect his conversations and his thoughts and his actions. And ultimately, it made a big difference for Joseph's life, and it made a big difference in the lives of those around him. Number three, Joseph embraced the practice of unlearning. Joseph correctly interprets the cupbearer and the baker's dreams. And as the cupbearer is leaving to go back to work with Pharaoh, Joseph says, "Remember me when you get to Pharaoh. Let him know I was wrongly accused. Get me out of here." And the cupbearer says, "I'll do it." And then the cupbearer forgets about Joseph. And I can imagine Joseph sitting there the next day with his bags packed at the prison door, just waiting for them to come and get him. And then a day turns into two, turns into a week, turns into a month. And for 2 years, Joseph is forgotten. You may be here today, and you know what it feels like to be forgotten. Maybe you got passed over for a promotion. Maybe as a kid, you weren't the one with the wild dreams. You were the one that was overlooked by your parents. Maybe you're here today and you're single. And you've been trying to date and you've been waiting for the one. And it feels like you've been waiting forever. And it feels like God has forgotten about you. Or maybe for you, you're married. And yet you feel like an afterthought for your spouse. And you know what it means to be forgotten. When everyone else had forgotten about Joseph, God had not forgotten. And you may be here today so that God can tell you, "I know what you're going through. I see you. I care. And I have not forgotten." For 2 years, Joseph is forgotten. Until finally, 2 years later, Pharaoh has a dream. And in this dream, there are seven cows that come out of the river. And these cows are fat and healthy. And then seven other cows come up that are skinny and sick. And these seven skinny, sick cows eat the seven fat, healthy cows. And it sounds gruesome and gross, and probably not the story you want to read your kids as a goodnight story in the picture Bible, right? And Pharaoh wakes up, and he's like, "What just sad? That was weird." And he goes back to sleep. He has another dream. In this dream, there's a stalk of grain with seven heads of wheat, and they're healthy and strong. And then seven other heads of wheat pop up that are thin and withered, and they consume the seven healthy pieces of wheat. Pharaoh wakes up and he's in a sweat and he's freaking out and he says, "What does this dream mean?" So he calls all of his officials together and all of his magicians and advisors and he says, "Tell me what my dream means." And no one can. And then the cupbearer remembers. He says, "I met a guy in prison, very trustworthy, great guy, really good with dreams." And so they bring Joseph from the prison, and he's presented before Pharaoh, and he tells Pharaoh this. He says, "I cannot interpret your dreams, but I serve a God who can. Tell me your dreams." So Pharaoh tells him the dreams, and Joseph says, "This is what your dreams mean. It means that for the next 7 years, there's going to be abundance in the land. The crops are going to produce like never before. It's going to be great. It's going to rain when it needs to rain. It's going to be sunny when it needs to be sunny. It's going to be 7 years of abundance. House values are going to go up. The Seahawks are going to win more Super Bowls. It's going to be great. But after that, 7 years are going to follow of famine and drought, so severe that no one's even going to remember the seven good years. And many, many people are going to die." So Pharaoh, Joseph goes on to say, he says, "So Pharaoh, here's what you should do. As if the ruler of Egypt, one of the most powerful nations in the world at this time, needs advice from a prisoner. But God chooses to use unlikely people in unexpected ways." Joseph says, "Here's what you need to do. During the next 7 years of abundance, you need to appoint someone to manage the excess. Gather it all up, so that there's enough for the 7 years of famine and drought. So that we'll have enough not only for our nation, but the excess will be so great, we'll have enough for the neighboring people groups as well. And as they come and purchase grain, we can acquire more of their land. And you can get even more rich than you already are. And Pharaoh, you can be a benefit to the entire world by saving the lives of countless people. Pharaoh says, that's a great idea, Joseph. I want to put you in charge of making it happen. And here's what it says in Genesis 41, verse 53. The 7 years of abundance in Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the other lands, but in the whole land of Egypt there was food. So Joseph becomes second in command in all of Egypt, becomes powerful and influential and wealthy. Remember Joseph's dream that he had when he was a kid, the dream of the wheat and the stars, that he had interpreted as everybody just bowing down and worshiping him. If Joseph's dream had been accomplished the way he had interpreted it, his family worshiping him, that would have been really fun for Joseph, but not really a benefit to anyone else. But God had a bigger plan. And maybe all along, Joseph's dreams really weren't about people worshiping him. Maybe all along, Joseph's dreams were about feeding people during a famine. And one of the things that Joseph had to do along the way was Joseph had to unlearn some assumptions about his dreams and what he thought his life would look like. Half of learning is learning. The other half of learning is unlearning. It's like when you get a new job. Not only do you have to learn the culture of the new job, there are certain things about your old job that you have to unlearn. That was one of the challenges that Jesus faced. One of the main goals of Jesus' teaching is unlearning. He's trying to reverse engineer religious minds, which can oftentimes be some of the most difficult to change. And so that's why, over and over again in Jesus' teaching, he'll say, you have heard it said this, but I tell you. You have heard it said, but I tell you. What's Jesus saying and doing in those moments? He's trying to uninstall old concepts and upgrade them with new truth. Half of spiritual growth is learning what we don't know. The other half is unlearning what we do know. Joseph had to unlearn some pride issues. Joseph had to unlearn some assumptions about himself and about God. What have you been unlearning lately? Maybe like Joseph, you've been unlearning some pride issues. You've been trying to do it on your own. You've been trying to get there by yourself. And the interesting thing is most pride issues are often rooted in fear issues. We're afraid to let our guard down. We're afraid to let other people in. We're afraid that if we don't compliment ourselves, no one else will. According to psychiatric reference books, there are approximately 2,000 classified fears. The interesting thing is some psychiatrists suggest that we are born with only two innate fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. Last Thursday, I was sitting on my bed with my one-year-old son, Henley, and as he will do often, he'll see something on the ground that he wants, and he'll just kind of like, meep, and just kind of like dive for it off the bed, and I'll have to jump and try to grab him. And I've always said, I don't think it's the falling that's the scary part. I think it's the abrupt landing at the bottom that usually gets you. But here's the reality. If there are only two innate fears, that means that every other fear has been learned. And that means, more importantly, that every other fear can be unlearned. Are there some fears that maybe have been holding you back that you need to unlearn? Maybe you're here today, and for you, like Joseph, you've been needing to unlearn some assumptions about yourself or about God. Someone said something about you, and it stuck with you. For some of you, Timberlake has been a process of unlearning what you thought about church, what you thought church could be or should be. Unlearning. Maybe you're here today and there are things in your life or in your faith that you need to unlearn. And some of you, you've been through a season, and it's been a difficult season, kind of like the season that Joseph went through. And you've been facing some hard truth. And the reality is that there are some practical things that we can do, counselors that we can see, decisions that we can make that are necessary. But at the same time, I believe there is a work that only God can do in our hearts and in our minds if we choose to let him. Proverbs 14:12 says, "There is a way that appears to be right, but in the end, it leads to death. It seems right, but it's wrong." Joseph thought he was right about his dreams, but Joseph had a 10-foot view. And when he zoomed out to the 50,000-foot view, he realized that God had much bigger plans for Joseph's life. And God used this underdog to do some incredible things. And finally, number four, Joseph let his faith frame his circumstances. Joseph finally gets the opportunity to confront his brothers. And instead of killing them or throwing them in a pit or letting them have it verbally, this is how Joseph responds. This is Joseph's conversation with his brothers. Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. He says this to them, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." He says, "You intended to harm me." He doesn't downplay it, doesn't minimize it. You know, I get it. It was just a joke. You know, it got carried too far. No. "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." If it's all about Joseph, then God let him down. If it's all about people worshiping Joseph, then God messed up. But if it's about feeding a nation during a famine, then God perfectly prepared and positioned Joseph to make it happen. Because Joseph learned the skills and the humility that he needed to lead and to manage while he was a prisoner and while he was a servant. And now at the end, not in the middle, but at the end, Joseph sees it and Joseph gets it. Have you ever noticed that two people can go through the same experience, and for one of them it strengthens their faith, and for the other one it destroys their faith? And I know that there's a lot of factors involved, and I don't want to overly simplify it, but the reality is that we can choose to let our circumstances frame our faith, or we can choose to let our faith frame our circumstances. You can say, "This didn't work out, so God must not care." Or you can say, "I know that God cares, so even though this didn't work out, God must have a different plan." And it's not about being naive or overly optimistic. It's simply about framing. It's about letting your faith be the filter for your experiences. Your experiences may not change. Your circumstances may not change, but your experience will be completely different. Haley and I own a house in Bonnie Lake, where we lived before we moved over to Issaquah. And a few months ago, we were trying to find renters, and the house was vacant. And it was a Monday afternoon. Monday is my day off. And I was at home, Haley was at work, and I got a phone call from one of my neighbors from Bonnie Lake. And she said, "Your house is flooding, and the fire department is here, and they're kicking down your door. You might want to come." I said, "Thanks for the great news. Nice talking to you." But by the time I got to the house, it was completely destroyed. There was a pipe in the upstairs that had broken and started pouring down and filled the ceiling up, and most of the ceiling tiles had fallen through, and it had been going for a few days. And by the time I got here, the place was just a disaster. And there was about $85,000 worth of damage that were done to the house. And I remember in that moment thinking, I don't have $85,000 to fix this house. And I had to face the real possibility that we might just have to walk away from this house. And I know that some of you are here today and you have faced and are facing much bigger challenges. But for me in that moment, it was huge. And I remember a few days later, I was driving to the property, and I was frustrated, and I was discouraged, and it took about an hour to get there, and I had a long conversation with God. And finally, at the end of the conversation, I came to the point where I said this. I said, God, regardless of the outcome of this situation, I will choose to thank you for blessing my life. And I know that some of you are way more spiritual than me, and that would come easy to you, but for me, it was very, very difficult for me to say that. And bigger than the miracle that God performed, providing insurance to take care of the house, was the miracle and the work that God did in my heart as I chose to let my faith frame my circumstances. And I don't know what you're facing today, but I do know that God is in the business of changing hearts and changing lives. And if you would be open to it today, there is a work that God can do. God can do something unexpected in your life and through your life if you'll let him. Let's pray. God, thank you for my friends that are here today. God, thank you for the incredible work that only you can do in our hearts and in our lives. God, thank you that even when we don't see it, God, you are working on our behalf behind the scenes. God, I pray that even this week, each of us would look for an opportunity to apply our faith. And God, that we would see the difference that you can make in our hearts and in our lives when we choose to say yes to Jesus. Maybe you're here today and you've never taken that first step of faith. And you'd say, you know what, today I want to choose to say yes to Jesus. I don't know what all that looks like or what all that means, but I want to put my faith in him. If that's you, would you just pray this prayer with me? I'll pray out loud. You can pray where you sit silently. Pray something like this. Dear Jesus, right now I invite you into my heart and into my life. Today I choose to say yes to you. God, thank you for sending your son Jesus to live and to die so that I could have a relationship with you. God, thank you for saving me. Thank you for forgiving me. From this day forward, I choose to make you the Lord and the leader of my life. God, I thank you for all of my friends who prayed that prayer for the first time or maybe the first time in a long time. And I just pray that we would see the incredible difference that you can make in our lives as we choose to follow you each day. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.